If you want to know what is really happening in the world today, you need to read the Parsha HaShavua, the weekly Torah reading. Join Rabbi Mendel Lipska for the next hour as he delves and enumerates the themes running through the weekly Torah Parsha, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
And a wonderful Erev Shabbos to all of you. Great to be with you again to share some ideas, the Parsha of the week, what's been happening. I've just come back from a 1.5-day trip to Israel. That's right, 1.5 days. I'll share that story with you. But first of all, let's talk about this Shabbos, Shabbos Mevorchim. We are going to bless the new month of Menachem Av. And of course, the month of Av brings to mind a time of great sadness. It culminates with Tisha B'Av, when we commemorate the destruction of the first and second Beit HaMikdash. Beit HaMikdash, they're both times when the temple was destroyed, and we think about exile and destruction. Now, exile is not only diaspora, when we are away from our home and homeland, but exile is a state of being as well, when we are not in full capacity of understanding who we are and what we see around us. Our sages tell us that one of the tragic symptoms of exile is that ein bal hanes makir b'niso, that the one to whom a miracle happens doesn't recognize it as a miracle. We go through life, and in truth, there are so many miracles that happen to us individually, to us as a people, to all of creation constantly. And yet, for some reason, we don't see it as such. We don't recognize the miracle happens all the time, surrounds us, the very miracle of our existence, the very miracle of our being here, the constant interaction of God's presence in our lives, ultimate, great, powerful miracles, and yet we don't see them. And that is one of the tragic symptoms of exile. Exile is a time that we don't see things clearly, we don't hear things clearly, we don't feel things clearly. And exile is a time that, as a result of this incredible insensitivity, we become accustomed to the natural around us, and we begin to see the natural as the ultimate reality. And when we begin to see the natural as the ultimate reality, we ourselves become desensitized to matter spiritual. After all, we are incredibly complex and miraculous combination of body and soul. And the body has its requirements. The soul has its requirements. The body has its modes of communication, and so does the soul. And when we emphasize the body only and forget about the needs of the soul, our lives become purely material and physical. And when that happens, that only emphasizes the intensity of exile. When we don't recognize the miracle, we don't recognize the presence of God, the whole idea of spirituality is something which becomes foreign and absent in our lives. And when we come to the month of Av, these feelings become far more intensified. Bein HaMitzarim, the 3 weeks. 3 weeks, 9 days, culminating with Tisha B'Av. It's a time that we are compelled to think about the idea of exile, its consequences. But at the same time, we have to also consider what we have to do in order to change that so-called reality, to think about the soul, to insert a tremendous dimension of spirituality into our lives, to begin to hear things clearly, to see things clearly, to feel things clearly. And that comes by understanding what spirituality is all about, by understanding the inner dimensions of Torah and how it affects our lives in a very real and personal way. And that demands study. And that demands a certain amount of understanding the inner dimensions of life, of Torah, of God's presence in the world. We we won't understand it all. We won't understand it fully. That will happen only with the coming of Mashiach. But there is so much we can understand. And this is why during the month of, 3 weeks of Tammuz Av, we think about these things. One of the things that we do is that we study those portions of the Torah that relate to the Beit HaMikdash, how it was built, its dimensions, anything that has to do with the Holy Temple. We become aware of what it is, its purpose. We become aware of the fact that it's missing. We become aware of the fact that we truly desire its rebuilding. We become aware of the fact that the world is a sadder place without the presence of the Holy Temple, exile. And yet when we talk about the temple in real terms, when we study, when we know, we look at every single detail, every single wall, every single door, every single vessel within the temple, it becomes real in our lives, and we become sensitive to something that is greater. And this is true about every aspect of the inner dimensions of Torah. It opens our minds, our hearts. We become sensitized. Instead of exile having this profound deadening effect upon us, we become alive, we become sensitive, we begin to see things altogether differently. And this is why now is the time to use those talents, talents of intellect, talents of emotion, to far greater use, so that we begin to see the miracle of our existence, so that we begin to see the miracle that takes place in front of our eyes. And this is why the custom is that we don't call the month of Av, we call it Menachem Av. We call it the month of consolation, because consolation transforms that which is sad and that which is painful and that which reminds us of destruction into something that is holy and that is good and brings comfort and brings the realization that we will return to that reality. And that knowledge that we will return to that reality opens our eyes, our ears, our souls to a far greater degree of accepting the miracle around us. This is the time that we have to deal with those things in a very real and profound way. Now is the time to set aside specific hours of study of those dimensions of Torah that deal with eliminating the causes of exile and bringing about redemption, bringing about Geula, bringing about the coming of Mashiach speedily and happily in our time, Menachem Av, a month of consolation. Yes, we are in a very dark and deep exile. It's all around us. But there is so much we can do individually as a people to bring light into this darkness, to open our eyes, to open our hearts, to open our souls. More of this soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
I mentioned earlier on that I flew to Israel this week for 1.5 days, and it wasn't an easy trip. I went to Bibi Menachem Avel to do a Shiva call, a dear friend of mine, whose son was killed in Gaza the week before. A young man of almost 22, staff sergeant, who led a platoon, and he and three others were killed, murdered, in Gaza. And I came into the home and overwhelmed by the amount of people that were sitting there, consoling the family. And while, of course, every time we hear of one of the chayalim of IDF falling, it touches us, it hurts us, gives us great pain. because it was so much closer to home, it brought all of this so much closer to my heart. And I sat with the family and spent time with them, spoke with them. And after Shiva ended the following morning, the military, the IDF, has an interesting and very meaningful type of event. They have a Haskara, a memorial service on Mount Herzl, next to the gravesite of the fallen soldier, where family and friends get together. And there is a memorial service. It's very touching. It's very meaningful. Shiva has ended, but it hasn't really ended. Memories are very powerful, emotions running high. A young son, a brother, a friend, well known in the community, well loved in the community. The IDF have this incredible Haskara memorial service. And we all went to the graveside on Mount Herzl. It has interesting dimensions to it. What struck me was the sensitivity and serenity of all those around. I'm sure you, as I have seen pictures of other so-called martyrs who took their lives, gave their lives. And you see these wild-eyed radicals jumping around, shooting guns, screaming and shouting. Here there was a tremendous sense of dignity and holiness. People standing. And yes, war-hardened soldiers with more than just a tear or two. And we sat around the grave, and they asked me to say a few words. It was something which I had great difficulty with. It was a time that I had to look at my dear friend, parents, siblings of this young man, family, friends. I thought to myself, what could I possibly say? But I got up and talked about the fact that it was the Parsha of Pinchas, our Parsha this week, Pinchas. And I said, Pinchas was a true hero. And why was he a true hero? Because he did something not only extraordinary. Not only did he put himself at risk physically and spiritually, physically because the tribe of Shimon, whose leader he had just killed, wanted to kill him, and spiritually because, yes, it might have been considered an act of murder by some. He did something quite extraordinary, but that was not why he was really a hero. He did it for no personal reward whatsoever. Not material reward, not spiritual reward. He did what he had to do because it had to be done. Pinchas looked around. There was a tremendous chil Hashem, a desecration of God's name. The leader of a tribe was behaving so brazenly, so immorally, in front of the eyes of the entire nation, mocking Moshe, mocking God, mocking the Torah. And God was becoming angry. And Pinchas realized that it would be great punishment. And Pinchas realized that unless something drastic, something radical would be done, there would be a tremendous, tremendous loss of life to the Jewish people. And he remembered a law that is talked about but not ruled on. And he realized that something had to be done. And he ran to Moses. And Moses said to him, "Let the reader of the letter enact the law as well." In other words, if you feel strongly, do it yourself. And Pinchas realized that he was going to do something which might cost him his life. As I said before, physically and spiritually. But he did what he did because it had to be done to save the Jewish people and to sanctify the name of God. And I said, this is the story of this young man and all those who are buried on this holy mountain. Young men and women, soldiers who have given their lives for no personal reward, really, but did what they had to do to protect their people, to protect the land, because it had to be done. They put themselves at great risk. Young men and women whose lives were still ahead of them, some in their very late teens, some in their early 20s, some a bit older, giving up their lives because it had to be done with no personal reward. These are the great heroes of our people. And we must never forget that. We must never forget who these young men and women are, what they do and what they've done, and the risk that they take and the price that they pay. And it's not enough that we hear about it and we feel a twinge of sorrow within our hearts. It has to go far beyond that. It has to go far beyond an emotional expression. We have to connect. We have to share in that experience by ourselves doing things, not for personal reward, but acts of goodness and kindness because it has to be done for no other reason. Not because it makes us look good. Not because it makes us feel good. Not because it makes us consider the fact that, well, we've done something wonderful. No. We do it because it's the right thing to do. And it has to be done. And how does God respond to all of that? God says, I'm giving him Brit Shalom, I'm giving him my covenant of peace. No greater gift than that. Shalom, peace in the physical sense, in the spiritual sense, in every sense whatsoever. There's nothing more that we want but real peace, a lasting, eternal peace that comes with Mashiach. This is the reward that happens, not because we ask for a reward, and this reward comes only from God, as a pure gift from God. It's not something that Pinchas had asked for. It's not something that these young men and women ask for. But that's the reward that will come, and that's how we have to participate. We have to do these acts because it has to be done. Whatever it is, it's a time that we have to eliminate faribles, unnecessary anger, unnecessary hatred of one toward another. It's a time of doing things because they have to be done. Yes, they're difficult, some of them. We can carry a grudge, and sometimes those grudges might be justified, certainly in our own eyes. But big deal. What has to be done is so much greater than the justification of those type of grudges. If young men and women can give their lives, literally, and for no reward whatsoever, but it has to be done, they are the heroes. We should be heroes in our own lives as well, wherever we can, by promoting Ahavas Chinam, real, true love between one and another, elimination of for ribbles, foolish or otherwise, even real ones. But doing things because they have to be done, particularly now, in the time of the 3 weeks. It's an opportune time to change things dramatically. We appeal to Hashem to give us priti shalom, to give us the covenant of peace on every single level. Inner peace, communal peace, universal peace, coming of Mashiach. But we have to share in that preparation. We all have to become heroes in our own life. That is what we learn from Pinchas. That is what I learned on that mountain, looking around and seeing those hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of graves and standing at the side of one that is a bit closer to home, sitting next to a dear friend, holding his hand and trying to console him about his son, the hero. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
Sitting on the side of that mountain after the Haskara service ended, the final moment of the service, of course, is the Kel Mala Rachamim, the Haskara. And we sat, and the whole congregation, once again, such as during the funeral, broke out in song with Ani Mamin, I believe with absolute faith in the coming of Mashiach, and even though he may tarry, I still have absolute faith in his coming. And then we sat there, quietly. And a young man came over. Well, you can see he wasn't as young as the others. This person who had been killed, murdered, he was a staff sergeant in the Haredi, in the Haredi battalion platoon. And there were many of the soldiers who served with him and under him. Beards, peyot, religious young men, standing at attention with dignity and respect. And this older fellow comes up, and he wanted to speak to the father. I was sitting right next to the father, and this man says that he was the commanding officer of this young soldier during training. And he said one day this young soldier comes up to him and asks if he can speak to him openly. And the commanding officer could see that he was unhappy about something, and he said yes. He said, "I'm unhappy." Said the commanding officer, "Are you unhappy with being in the army? Are you unhappy as a religious person being in the army?" He said, "No. That's not what it's all about." He said, I'm unhappy with you," he says to the commanding officer, a senior officer. And this commanding officer is telling us, I was taken aback. What is this young soldier talking about? He's unhappy with me. So I asked him, "What do you mean?" He says, "You look at us, and you see us as recruits. People are going into the armed services for at least 2, sometimes 3, sometimes 4 years. But you're only looking at us externally. You're not looking into our hearts. And because you're not looking into our hearts, you're not preparing us properly for what has to be done." The senior officer says, "I was totally taken aback what this young man was saying to me." And he said to the father, and to me, I was sitting there, "You have no idea. But at that moment, my life changed. My life changed because of what this young recruit was saying was so true. I was so determined to make these young soldiers fit for the army, ready for battle, that I forgot to look into their hearts. I forgot to see them as total people. Not only bodies, but people with a heart, but people with a soul. And it changed me. I'm a different person. He said this young man became a staff sergeant. He excelled. I followed his career. He excelled in what he was doing, and this is why he was appointed to this position in the Haredi Battalion. Not an easy job, but he was ready for it. And he never realized to what degree he changed my life as a commanding officer. I thought to myself, wow, a young man with such insight, but also the courage to say this to a senior officer. This is not really done within the structure of the military services. But the young man felt that in order for the soldiers to be prepared as best as possible, one had to see their souls as well as their bodies. And this was the job of the commanding officer. I walked away from that mountain, and I thought to myself, we live our lives. We hear things, we feel things. We empathize with what's going on. But do we do enough? My answer was no, we don't do enough. There's so much more that could and should be done. And I'm not only talking about contributing to the cause of doing things for the Chayalim, for the soldiers, of course. But as I said earlier on, doing something in our own lives with the people around us, the communities around us, to a far greater degree. In the Haftarah that we'll be reading tomorrow, it's all about the prophet Elijah. Again, another hero who stood up to Ahab and Jezebel, Ahab and Jezebel, the many prophets of Baal, the false prophets, risked his life on so many occasions. Finally came to a point where he says to God, I'm done. I did whatever I can do. And God says, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? You're not finished. And follow the Haftarah tomorrow. It speaks about how a huge fire came, but God was not in the fire. A huge wind, a raging. God was not in the wind, was not in the howling sound. But called the Mamadaka. God was in that quiet, almost silent sound. You know, we're used to listening to the raging sound, the fire, to the wind. We stop listening to the quiet sound. And that's what we have to do. The quiet sound, which is so much more powerful. It contains volumes and volumes that we have to hear, but that takes dedication. It's easy to hear the noise. It's difficult to hear the silence and what the silence contains. To hear the heart, to hear the soul. That takes courage, that takes strength. Pinchas and Eliyahu shared a soul. That's why the Haftarah speaks about Eliyahu. We all share a soul. We share a soul, well, we come from one source. We share a soul with that young soldier who's buried on our Herzl, Mount Herzl. We share a soul with all those soldiers. But are we the same type of heroes? Probably not. But we have to strive to be as much as we can, to do things because they have to be done, and to hear the heart and to hear the soul, and to remove negativity, to remove the foolishness, to remove the foribles, to remove the silliness, to remove that which divides us, which fragments us, It's a time to build. It's a time to unite. It's a time to create goodness for goodness sake, for no other reason. Not because we're going to benefit, not because we're going to look good, but because it has to be done. This is our duty. It's Shabbos Mevorchim. We're going to bless the month of Menachemov, consoling the Father, consoling God Almighty Himself. Yes, and He will console us. And it's a great time to be in shul and to hear the portion of Pinchas. Pinchas was almost killed by the tribe of Shimon. Pinchas was almost shunned by the entire people. God comes along and says, "This is the man who caused me not to be angry with my people, and therefore I give him Brit Shalom, the covenant of peace forevermore. He will be a Kohen, a man of love, he and his offspring forevermore." That's his reward, not because he asked for it, but because this is what he deserves. It's a parsha that you have to listen to, and listen, as I always say, to those words that speak to you. Listen to the Haftarah. Listen to the pained words of Eliyahu and Navi, the prophet Elijah. Listen to how he finds Elisha and appoints him to be his successor. Listen to it all. It's a great Shabbos. It's a great time. It's a great opportunity. Do it and do it well. And you know what? Become a hero with Shabbos.